I got some.
We're live for Monday night. Big Footy Tiger Cast. Hope you're all doing well. I did say we were about to go live. I don't mind if we carry on with the conversation. It's fine. It's fine. I hope everyone's had a wonderful weekend. Sporting the K-Mac headband, 200 games this week. You can pick him up from K-Mac. I'm not sure, but Richmond were crazy not to sell these in the Partner Age store. They could have made an absolute killing with a 33 on there. But yeah, Kmart, you can get your headbands. Get down to the G and show your headbands off for this weekend. But what were you going to say, Jay? Was there something? Was there a point to you were?
I have a bit of a news slash update from a very good friend of the show. What's his name? Meatball.
Oh. Please?
Yeah,
so, I need like a breaking news little audio file. I think I'll have to find one of those. We're opening up with breaking news, folks. This is uncharted territory for us. Here we go.
What do you got for Sandra Sully?
I heard the announcement is coming as soon as next week on Prestia.
Oh, there you go.
Right.
That's what I was being told today by a source that we all trust implicitly. I asked if I could mention it. He said yes. I also said, do you want to be associated with it? That part of the question wasn't answered, so I'll leave that private. But it's a source we all think is a good source, and apparently we're going with next week, imminent announcement.
So the further breaking news will be then, welcome to Richmond, Razzo. Is that...
Well.
I have heard things on Razzo, well, yes.
There we go. Will happen before drink on, apparently.
Oh, there you go.
There's a thumbs up. That's a big clue. There we go.
Interesting. There we go. Some breaking news on the start of the show, which we don't often do, but I like it. I'm here and I'm all for it. Tiggs is doing well. He's on without wanting to go through his personal life, but he's just on some new medication with regards to the head injury, and it's knocking him for six a bit. So obviously his health is first and foremost and the most paramount thing that he gets right. He watches the games and obviously sends his love and best regards. Make sure you hit him up on Twitter. Just drop him an inbox. He'll be back on soon, but he just doesn't want to jump on when he's not sort of fully able to commit to doing it properly. So, which I can respect and appreciate.
Explain CB then. He still turns up.
Well, yeah. It's... yeah.
You're not all named an album after me, mate. And also, speaking of music, good evening to Juno Roxas as well. Lovely to have him here. And yes, that is my forum name.
There we go. Now, does anyone notice anything different about the layout of tonight where the cameras are positioned? There's a bit of discussion about this before the show. Let's see if anyone can pick up on it as we get on with it. People are saying they would go after Toner. Some people are going after Razzo. Grok's back next week. He's a bit crook at the moment, so Grok will be back next week. Yeah, plenty happening. And we haven't even started talking about the first little bit yet, which was good. Oh, Joe Racing onto it. Now, yeah. Bonus points. Do anyone know why he might be up the top? Let's just say the two gentlemen in picture tend to duke it out a little bit to see who gets top position. But,
As I was saying, it takes time to manually load a new background every week, and I like to give the viewers a fresh background that we can talk about every week. No effort from CB ever. And I've just found out that's because he doesn't have a clue what he's doing and he's finding it impossible.
Much like my football career, mate. It wasn't really much happening there. And also, Juno, I was thinking of maybe I should rename myself Ken Tamblyn. You'll know that gag.
Oh, that's a good one, RSC. Surprised that McCall and Harley aren't in the background. Now, there's going to be a reason why he's got those two there, though. EJ doesn't do things without reason. So I'm sure we'll hear about that later on. Or was there no reason?
There's no great secret. The reason is I just want to give these two guys a shout-out. They're holding the middle together really well. There's been times where they've been given a bit of stick for whatever reason, but both of them are having stellar seasons. That's about the strength of it.
I think that's fair. And I mean, our votes, which will drop tomorrow night, reflect that as well. And I'm sure our club best and fairest will reflect it as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll get stuck into it. Before we get into the Richmond side of things, one of the favourite segments of the week, which has taken a slight little bump in the road, an unexpected bump in the road, it must be said. The North Melbourne Death Ride chart, it's completely thrown me. I've had to get a whole new colour involved, a new letter. I didn't know whether to put it at the top or the bottom, the logo. It's thrown me into a little bit of chaos here. But we've got the draw, Brisbane against North Melbourne, would you believe? They somehow drew and come away with 2 points, which is really handy for them in terms of being able to leapfrog us and a couple of others later in the year, potentially. So that's not a great result on that front. But the overarching position is they are still on 7 losses. They're still 17th, and we've still got pick number 2. So that part of it's still good. Obviously, us getting the win against West Coast helps put us a little bit ahead. But it would have been nice to have had another 2-point buffer on them. But yeah, fair play to them for getting the draw against Brisbane, to be honest. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and they threw it away too.
Yeah, they could have won it at the end, couldn't they?
Yeah. But it doesn't really matter if North Melbourne finish second last or not, because pick 1 and pick 2 will be going to the Eagles. So when they get the Oscar Allen compensation, so we're battling for a pick a little bit further down.
That's true. And that's where it was a bit of a double-edged sword, the game on the weekend, wasn't it, in terms of the result? Like, you obviously want to win, but it could have meant something a little bit more juicier had we lost. But, you know, wasn't to be. That's okay. I'll take the win, though. Now, before we get into the game side of it, now, there's no official fitness report out just yet. I did click a refresh before. But there had been news that broke, and I think, CB, you posted the article in our chat. I think it was someone from the AFL that Lefau is on the verge of returning to the VFL this week, I think. Is that what we've read, this week returning?
He's returning, yep. So Lefau's back, which is magnificent. That's 2 weeks ahead of schedule. And I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Young comes back ahead of schedule a little bit too. I think those two boys will be very good additions into the VFL program. But yeah, he's back. Thank God.
McKelty Lefau, EJ, pretty excited to get him back amongst the mix. We'll be trying to get him back in the ones ASAP, I dare say.
Yeah, and that will give us the chance to rotate that third forward between the young kids. So I'll be able to rest and spell them as they go. As good as they were, another senior body would be very helpful.
I just read a headline on the Richmond website, McCullough fined by MRO. And initially, I was going, surely he hasn't copped a whack for the contact with Ali Reid.
I thought that too. I did the same thing.
He made contact with an umpire.
I think we all did it.
Yeah. I'm like, because I saw the photo in the Richmond Gallery. Like, that's a cracking photo to get the exact contact where Harley Reid's face is halfway around to the other side. I'm like, surely he's not got done. But yeah, I think you're right. I think we all did the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, Lefau back into the VFL is amazing. Really, really pumped for him. Like we've said, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how he goes playing as a genuine second forward alongside Lynch. Because he had to play the main man, the main role without him, and that's not kind of where he was at in his footballing development. So to see how he goes with a secondary person, well, with Tom Lynch, will be really interesting. But with that, even without him coming in, there's a couple of young kids still doing some really nice stuff, which I'm sure we'll talk about right now, as Richmond defeated West Coast 11-15-81 to 11-13-79 by 2 points at the MCG, all thanks to a massive Tom Brown tackle right at the end. Mansell 2 goals, Lynch 2 goals, Campbell 2 goals, Taranto, Sims, Ralph Smith, Nankervis and Brown all with a goal each. Look, as we sort of said during the week, that this was a game that we always felt that both teams thought they could win and it was going to be a hot contest. And I don't know, I kind of walked away from watching the replay thinking it was just a well-fought-out game. I know the skills weren't of a top-four team for both games, but I don't think it was as bad of a spectacle as some might have made out. Maybe it was worse being there live, I'm not sure. But what'd you make of that win, boys? Tom Brown missed the body contact on the contest 10 seconds prior and then made up for it with a tremendous tackle at the end of the game to clutch it for us.
Well, I think that what you got to keep in mind is it was, as you said, it was the bottom placed team playing the third last team in the ladder. And that's just where the two clubs are at currently. There's no denying that. But you got to win. During this year, we all expected some ugly losses. And, well, we're going to get some ugly wins as well. And that was an ugly win. But the kids learned how to hold on and fight out a tight one. So as Broadie said, Nathan Broad said, you know, the kids are going to learn a lot either way from a close loss or a close win. It's better to get the close win, I guess. So from my perspective, two steps forward for last week. So couldn't be happier.
And EJ, it's also about the young kids, yeah, learning how to win. I mean, the Richmond of the last few years, we would have bottled that summer. We would have found a way to have lost it. So to create winning habits and put into practice the things that you train and things like that, it's kind of invaluable. And a lot of people say that these games are sometimes worth 20.
Yeah, and let me tell you, it was the old guys that showed them how to do it. Yeah. Some of our older heads on the weekend were massive. I was actually really impressed with West Coast. I thought that we would be able to get through them in the corridor a lot easier than what they did. They did a fantastic job of blocking it up. Liam Ryan was excellent in the centre until he got absolutely flattened in late in the third quarter. And for anyone, and I've had a couple of people questioning, oh, you know, why would they take Jack Graham? You watch the game on the weekend and Baker and Graham are amongst the West Coast best. They are going to be invaluable for them going forward. Of our guys, there was a lot to like. Again, my man, Montmorency's finest, which was a long, 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 long time ago, my junior footy club. So my man, Dim Sims. I don't think, and I've been saying beforehand that he had the shit in him, that he was aggressive and he had the mongrel. I don't think anyone can now not see that, give two or three pre-seasons, he's going to be a monster. But yeah, on top of that, how good was the foot skills with, like, with the ball to Buddy Lynch and stuff like that? Yeah.
Now, he's now the second big forward of ours that's done that. You remember in round one, Harry Armstrong hit a very nice little flat pass 45 metres into the goal square to set up a goal there as well. It's a noticeable thing with the way we've drafted. Not only, and maybe just the way the kids are developing and trained these days coming through junior ranks, but they're no longer just a lumbering big forward who can just mark and kick goals. Like, he's actually shown some foot skills of a midfielder to hit that target, which was unbelievable.
Well, I think there was a passage in the first quarter where Sims got it high up the ground, and then he laced out Jonty Fall sort of around a 50-metre mark. And I just looked at my lads and I just said, the future has just flashed before your eyes, boys. Get used to that. So, and speaking of that, Jonty Fall, I know maybe possession-wise may not show up as great, but his work off the ball and around the ball, the kid has got some serious smarts. And, again, showing some wonderful signs is Jonty Fall.
100%. That was the game, I think, that showed he's a serious player. That was a mature game. That was intelligent, like the tap down, all the clever stuff. He's an intelligent player, and like Sims, physically he wants it. He's happy to crash and bash. He's got solid hands, good work ethic. That was his best game, and it was a sneaky game. Like,
yeah,
on face value, but you go back and you watch the body work and you watch the taps and things like that, he was fantastic.
He slipped into my votes. That's how good I thought he played and how important he was. Like, the amount of times he brought the ball to ground to give us another chance to regather the ball was unbelievable. And you don't get stats for that. And I think everyone maybe expected him to kick a few goals given how weakened the West Coast backline was with no McGovern, no Allen. But like that deft touch to Lynch, even though it ended up being a score review touch behind, he just showed some great footy smarts. He had a good rundown tackle as well. So he showed he's got a burst of speed and read the play and was able to move up and tackle. I thought that was a super game from Jonty Fall. And I was messaging Grok, and as Grok said, it pretty much showed why we valued him as the best rated key forward of the draft in that game, I think.
And Chaotic says it. He's an aerobic beast. He is going to outwork so many defenders in time. He really gets on his bike.
I've just seen a stupid comment. He's actually broke my concentration. God damn you, eh?
This one.
It's a great reference. It's actually a really good reference, and he's got me. Thank you. But no, look, that's what I was going to say. The most impressive thing about all the kids who've played so far is not one of them, and this is a terrible crude expression, but I'm going to roll with it, we haven't recruited soft cocks. They all put their head over it and they all have a dead set dip. Like they don't take a backward step. And it's been a long time since we've seen what, five? How many debutants is he? Four from the draft crop or five?
I think we've debuted five.
I think it's
four or five.
Well, yeah.
But whatever it is, I can't remember the last time when we've seen five first-year players come in and they've all played, like had that hard edge to them, which is magnificent moving forward. Exactly what our club needs at this stage.
It's been huge. And they're only going to get better as the years get on. They get a bit more and more experience. So you can see that they've drafted a specific type, can't you, with these key forwards. The competitiveness, Jonty Faw, like we've mentioned in previous weeks, not afraid to get stuck into the stashes, the pushes and shoves. The poor guy's going to rack up bloody fines before he's even earned an income to pay for him. But, they'll end up getting reward for effort on the scoreboard sooner rather than later, I think.
And can I just say this? Just speaking on the opposition, Harley Reid is born to play on the MCG. He is born to play on that ground. We got to get him. We've got
to get him. It was nice of our head recruiter to go over and have a chat to him pre-game too, I noted.
Did he really?
No, Lawler.
Sam Lawler.
Oh, Lawler. All right. I mean, a staffer just wandered over. Jesus. Yeah, no, Lawler having a nice word to him. It makes you wonder what's said. Interestingly, a lot of our boys were getting stuck into Harley along the journey. So hopefully it's just a bit of banter and a bit of, across.
He's done argue on Vlosten was about 50 metres to my right, or about 100 metres, and it looked great. He absolutely bench-pressed Vlosten to the ground, mate. He didn't have stand a chance. He just went a bit far, but it was, he showed... he's a good kid. It just sort of, hopefully, the knockers hopefully saw that. Yeah, the Richmond people going, oh, I don't know if we want him. Hopefully they take that game in and just understand that the kid's, he's a talent.
Now, EJ, you'd made, or was EJ or CB, one of you mentioned that it was the older generation of player that were the ones that were leading the way in this game. I'll open it up to both of you to say some words on probably Broad and Vlosten in particular were immense down back. If there's any others, highlight them as well.
Yeah, they were very high in my votes, those two. They were both huge. And I know we're going to say some positive things about Brown. He came good in the second half, but gee, up in the first half, he was poor. He bugged out of a contest, which really, I nearly broke my television. He was getting caught a couple of yards behind his opponent again. And I thought, in that second and third quarter, those two blokes down back, absolutely kept us in the game. Because when we look at the game in totality, we were really good in the first quarter. Two red time goals just undid all the good work.
Yeah.
Then for about a quarter and a half, West Coast were really, they were on top of us. That's a good point. How much better is our back line with Boulder in it? It allows Broad and Vlosten to do their thing. That's a very good point. So we only played two and a half good quarters of footy on the weekend. West Coast had their time in the sun and, it was a really good game to watch.
Well, keep in mind, Mini McWalter actually put a couple of moves that I don't know if we were ready for by playing Liam Ryan and there's another fellow through the guts and then taking, who's the fellow from Geelong, the on-baller? I can't think of his name. Who's normally there on board?
Kelly.
Yeah, playing Kelly as a permanent forward. Pretty smart coaching because it caught us off guard. That speed and outside run showed us up a little bit. So we're up against it from that perspective as well.
Yeah, I liked the Liam Ryan move to the middle for them. I wasn't expecting it, and it just shows again why teams need that explosive bit of pace in there. Same as what Cozzy Pickett's done, and I think that's why I still want that point of difference. But Sam Banks off halfback. Obviously, Jaden Short was a late out with some knee soreness who may not get up for this week either, potentially, which is a different topic we'll touch on after. But Sam Banks, it seemed like, rolled through the halfback line. And I reckon it was a career-best game for him. It was 28 odd disposals, 600-and-something metres gained, a team high. He looks really, really settled down there. And maybe has he found himself a more permanent role? Like, I suppose what I'm trying to ask is, did we play or function better rebounding off the half back line with someone else other than Short doing it, without that sounding disrespectful? But it's been a bit of a sore spot for us.
I'm just trying to look up what his disposal efficiency was, to be honest with you.
Well, I can tell you this. Look, Banks had a great game. He played really well, but he actually really hurt us on a few occasions with very poor decisions. And as such, he was actually only rated the 24th best player on the ground and the 12th best Tiger. He did a lot right, and he gets a tick for me, no dramas at all. But and it was one of his better games, no drama, but he had obvious decisions, hesitated, and we got turned over and scored against on more than one occasion. And that's the last there. Well, mark this date down. RFC Center and I are agreeing on something. he made some really poor decisions that takes the gloss off. On the whole, was a very good game.
So he was at 89% efficiency.
With 600 metres gained.
Yeah, probably massive metre gain.
Yeah, but I'm saying, 89% disposal efficiency, pretty damn handy. So I don't think Jaden Short's had a game of those numbers this year.
I don't know, but one thing that I'll back Banks in ahead of Short at the moment is willingness to put himself in the contest. So that
puts his head over the ball, doesn't he? Like, he plays with some confidence and he has a crack, which I think all the young kids are doing, which is as much as you can kind of ask for. Kay McAuliffe, your man EJ, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned him earlier, but I was really wrapped for his game. I know some people are going to say that he's unfit and his fitness base has to build and stuff like that, because he played 69% time on ground, which was the second lowest for the team. The lowest was the sub, which was Trezise. But I really loved what he offered. He was probably unlucky not to have a couple of goals early as well. He was peppering the goals and just missing some tight shots, but his pressure was good. Obviously, his tackling was fierce. And to me, it pretty much showed exactly why we need to keep playing this kid in the seniors on a more permanent basis, because he offers something else that our other mids don't do.
Well, he's got that kamikaze attack like Cochin, where, I mean, in the first quarter, physically, he really stamped himself on the game. He did fall away. Yes, it's somewhat to do with game time, but also somewhat to do with he needs to just build that endurance base. I think another preseason will make a big difference. I think we need to get a block of games into him. Mm-hmm. I was really excited after the first quarter, and he was really good up to half time, but I think he only had two disposals in the second half. Oh, I might be wrong. I think it was about two or three. So he did fade. But there's more than enough for me to say, yep, he gets another shot, no dramas.
Well, six tackles alone, and was it four contested possessions? So he was going in, he was cracking in.
So he was originally the sub, right?
Yes, and then what was the other thing too? He got the call up with 10 minutes to get.
Yeah, like, so in an ideal world, he gets a quarter and a half. And the tank isn't the issue because he's getting the exposure at the higher speed, etc. So that's what they wanted to do with him. This will only benefit him, and I think down the track we'll see the benefits of it.
Yeah,
I liked him. Sims, we've spoken about, loved his mark and goal as well. Like, what a moment for him just to be able to. That mark was actually really difficult because he was actually leading up at Lynch moments beforehand. So he was running back against the flight of where the kick was going, then turned around, stuck the arms up with oncoming traffic just barreling into him and stuck it. So he was super impressive. Seth Campbell, back to some okay form, gents. He kicked two goals, showed some really good pace again. He's probably going to be one that's going to be a little bit inconsistent throughout the year, just given his inexperience and age. But, yeah, that was another ripper game from him.
Is he he's Greener's boy, isn't he? So Seth Campbell's his Greener's boy.
Is he?
I think he likes him. Look, again, he's keeping up with his form. He's goals wise for games played and age, he's the best we've had since Dusty with these numbers. So for goals, he's fantastic. We were a bit dirty on that first goal he got because we thought maybe that might have been Sims's first. But when you look at where it landed, it could have munged off into the points. Yeah. So he was right to actually go for it. But initially we were like, oh, I'll let it roll through. But it was the right decision. So, and Seth Campbell's playing high up the ground. And yeah, they're right, six tackles. He's having a very, very good year. Really good.
He was the highest rated, as RFC has said, and that was what I was going to bring out. He was the highest rated Richmond player on the ground, highest rated player on the ground for the stop. And that has a lot to do with the defensive side of his game, as well as his possessions having impact. 19 disposals, that's for him, is quite high.
And I was about to say this as well, that RFC mentioned that it was really nice to see him up and around stoppages in different parts of the ground too, and was often used as an outlet pass or was getting first possession himself. That's the natural transformation progression I want to see from someone like him.
And Grock's raised a good point. So he's the 19th highest rated player in the AFL, right? And that's according to ratings. So why wouldn't he be in all Australian conversations right now?
Because he plays for Richmond?
Yeah, correct. If he played for Port Adelaide or some shit truck team, Fremantle or something, they'd all be fapping over him. Plays for Richmond, don't worry about it. But yeah, his numbers back everything up.
Now, I don't want to alarm anyone, but I saw something on the weekend that, look, it does have me worried. All right. I just want to put it out there. Right. Sam Lawler fumbled the ball.
Yes. I saw it.
I nearly passed out in shock. Like, it was this one fumble, and it's the first time I've seen him not be clean.
And he missed the target inside 50 that was relatively open as well, the poor kid. But he's human, that's right. That's right, the jersey's human.
For a brief second there, Edge, I thought you were going to bring up about blokes over 50 wearing tight jeans and Converse sneakers. I thought I got a bit nervous there.
Oh, no. Yeah, look, Lawler did some okay. He did some other really nice things, though, some good contested possessions early on, smashing through packs to pick up the ball. My worry for him from a perception perspective is then Richmond people go and see what Harvey Langford's just done for Melbourne, kicking three goals and ripping a game apart, and everyone's wanting that. Well, I suppose my counterpoint is that Melbourne and Richmond are at two different stages in terms of their experience and things like that. It's easy for Harvey Langford to slot in and play his role. Still got to do it, and credit to him for doing it, than what it is for Lawler to do what he's got to do in our type of side. So his time will come. Don't worry about that, folks. His time will come.
Well, let's talk about this, right? So Lawler's playing two really hard positions in his first year. He's playing half forward, so you've got to get your own pill, and he's going on the ball now and actually attending centre clearances, whereas Trainer is sitting behind the ball where it's coming to him. So it's very hard. Like right now you're looking at, Luke Trainer, length of Flemington straight, you know, with the year he's having. But if you look at the two roles they're doing, Trainer, it's a little bit easier for Trainer because the ball comes to him. But having said that, the kid's a freak. He's not looking like a fifth-game player. He's looking like a 105-game player. Absolute freak.
The thing we have to remember is he hasn't had a preseason yet. Up until this year, he'd been playing cricket, and he was managed and injured at the start of this preseason. If he was up and going and did the whole preseason, he's probably playing more time in the middle. Let's just call our Jets. The club are managing him really well. He'll probably have another couple of games off at different stages. As Ooze said, and didn't you love Ooze's press conference where he absolutely laid out everything that was wrong? It wasn't all just praise and yeah. He knows like his that. Work to do. He said, wins and losses this year are not important. It's great we have wins, but this is a development year. We are getting development into the players. That's all we have to think about. No stress about anything else.
Elise May, seriously, if you knew my postings about mate Kalina, he's been the biggest waste of space on our list for 4 years. I would have cut him after about 2 weeks. It's just, I can't understand how we go for 8-foot-high basketballers who've never played the game. There must be a million blokes in the suburbs.
No, but he had played the game. That was the difference, CB. He played it at a NAB under 8 or under 16 level, so he knows what he's doing. We just torched him with back injury last year. We mismanaged him. I'm comfortable that we want to see how it panned out.
Can I in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne playing better?
Can I raise a question here?
Yes.
And this question comes from a position of joy. We've had five of our draftees. We've had seven debutants. We've had five of our draftees from last year's crop debut so far. Yep. Have any of them at all look like a bust?
Not yet.
Nope.
No.
I'm breaking out of sweat on Josh Smiley, though, mate. There's a bit of heat there on the VFL. In the comments around the VFL.
No.
Still, you've got to do this.
Ticking all the boxes so far, which is good. Which is exactly what I want to see. Yeah, they have. They honestly have. And no doubt we'll see. I think we'll see another one or two very shortly as well, which I'll probably touch on in the changes. But was anyone else we need to mention before we do come on, man? Because I know you're coming off a bit of a long run up here, EJ.
Oh, are we? Right. What did I say again? As you know, I was travelling for most of the afternoon. What did I do? I did, I know this, yes, okay, got him. Yeah, right. Okay, are we going with it?
Yep, come on, man, it's now time.
Come on, man.
I was waiting for the sting.
Hang on,
man.
I'm working on it.
There it is. Right, we are going to expand this to a top 10 because it's just getting ridiculous. It's been an insane week, so much so for the first time, I'm putting two entrants in and they're going straight to the top of the leaderboard. Now, unlike Port Adelaide, I didn't conflate this issue and just make it one big glob. I was actually able to separate it into two issues.
Yep.
Right. AFL, you've got a player who is physically threatened three players on separate occasions. You have suspended people for dressing up as a taxi driver. It's just ridiculous, the suspensions in the way of woke culture to look good, and yet someone actually makes physical threats and you don't suspend them. You don't do anything. But then what happens is somehow magically during the week they say they're going to take a week away from the game, and you come out with a 1 week suspension and you expect us to believe this and spy this shit.
Yeah.
You are just a management organization. You've got no balls. You couldn't run a meat raffle.
Come on, man.
Unbelievable. But number one, with a bullet.
Do I bring David up the graphic Posh. Now?
Sorry?
Do you want to bring the graphic up now?
Oh, yeah, you might as well. David Koch and the Port Adelaide Football Club. Now, I know that racism in our game is a very, very important issue. I think we all do. Now, I was going to, if I had time, get the stats on how many Indigenous players there are in the AFL. It's got to be 50 or 60, right?
There's
a stack, right? We've got five or six at our club. Yeah, look, but name me one other player that has made a threat to anyone. You can't. So how and why, in a pathetic attempt to water down and to take the pressure off Willy Rioli, David Koch and Port Adelaide have conflated the issue and talked about the pressures of racism and how some of the things said on the ground might not be racist, but he takes them as racist. And you've got Ken Hinckley saying, I wouldn't even speak to him this week, right? Racism is important. We need to stamp it out. What really did is a separate subject entirely. It has got nothing to do with racism. If he was racially vilified on any of those three occasions, we would have heard about it straight away. The opposition players would have been sanctioned and we wouldn't be where we are, right? Port Adelaide have enabled this behaviour, and then when they finally pull him up, they've conflated it and tried to soften the blow with racism. It actually weakens the stance against racism. Port Adelaide, David Koch, get stuffed.
Come on, man.
Yep, not much. Yeah, like you said, it's completely separate topics. I was a little bit miffed that they went down this path as well, to be honest. But welcome to the Come On Man leaderboard. Port Adelaide, Koshy and the AFLs. We're up to a top seven now. Top seven. You really challenged my editing skills at late notice here, EJ. I've managed to put this together. But we're going to evolve to a top 10. It deserves to be there.
I had about five or six other points this week, but those two were so clear and away that I didn't even bother with the nominations. It's honestly that Port Adelaide's response made me really angry because of the fact that it demeans real issues with racism when they are apparent and when it's actually what to use it as a cop out. Oh, got my blood boiling.
Yep. Not to dive into a different topic, but we see the same thing happen on a number of levels with the mental health card as well, used to shield different decisions that were made and things like that. Like you said, it just diminishes the actual real big issues that are at play here in society. So,
I never knew that cocaine could cause so many hamstring injuries personally, but there you go.
But yeah, come on, man, done for the week. I like it. All right, well, with that said, let's get stuck into the preview of the North Melbourne game, a massive game coming up this week. This is, again, another one of those games that both teams are going to feel like they can win. Dare I say it is both teams' grand final. Let's talk about ins and outs first. Obviously, the VFL bye, or another week off for us, come at a really shit time. I'm not sure there's ever a good time, but the ones I want to throw up, I still think that Steely Green might be in a bit of a lull at the moment, and I still wouldn't mind seeing Jasper Elgar take his spot. I think Steely had five disposals. I'm not entirely sure what his pressure acts were. I just haven't seen the same Steely from the first few games. I think he just needs to go back and find some form at VFL level. And even though there's been no VFL game, I would still strongly consider bringing in Jasper Elgar to play that small, medium forward role just on the back of his body of work. And the other one is Dow probably looked a little bit underperformed as well on the weekend. And I've been a big fan of Dow, so yeah, put that on the table. And I'm not sure if he was injured. That's another good point, Nathan. But it made me think that is Smiley a sneaky chance to maybe come in off that as well. I'm probably less sold on that one, but I'm more sold on the Elgar coming in one. What do you gentlemen think?
I've got one that does upset me, but it could be another out. Brody dislocated his finger so bad, they thought it was going to be a borderline compound fracture.
Yes.
So I don't reckon Broad will miss. I think he'll just do the old Sparky tape like they do in the minor leagues. And I think he'll play. But, by all accounts, the finger wasn't great.
So if Broad was to miss, hypothetically, and Short pulls up, that's probably going to be a swap there, I would imagine.
Trezise comes in.
And Trezise plays a role. Any extra thoughts on the Green for Elgar situation and where does Thompson Dow sit? Is Smiley a chance or anyone else of note to come in?
Maybe Dow might be subbed this week and maybe they do bring another one in from the VFL program. But I would think, Green's probably the one. Maybe Broad. So I reckon maybe two changes this week.
EJ, what are you thinking?
I'd just do Steely for Elgar. That's it. Leave it. And then maybe move Dow to sub and bring Trezise in. But yeah. Dow stays in the 23.
I think so. It makes sense. He's pretty versatile. You can play him on a wing, play him on the ball. You can do a bit with him.
Yep, unless he's obviously injured, which I don't think anything's come out about that. But, that would be the only... Yeah,
can we just say one thing? Is it K-Max 200 this week?
Yes.
Cappy,
right. A, fantastic. Well done, Cappy. He looked so much better on a wing than on the ball.
I mean, it's his natural habitat being out there. Like, he's played that role for 8-10 years, whatever it might be. So that it makes sense. But where does it work best for us, though? I mean, if he's playing out in the wing, that then means we maybe see more midfield minutes for a Lawler, for a McCall, of someone like that, which I think, is that more beneficial long-term? Is that a better end game result?
I think so. That's my two cents. Cappy racked it up. Admittedly, about 90% of his kicks were on his opposite foot. He was missing half the targets, but he just racked up so much more ball on the outside. So I think if McAuliffe and those boys are playing, open up that slot, get him in there. Get him in.
Well, that's a good one, Jay Tiger. Gray for Broad if Broadie is in doubt with the finger. That's a good shout. As the consensus does seem that Smiley could be another, and I don't disagree. I think he probably does need fitness wise another week or two in the VFL, EJ, but I just thought if a spot opened up, maybe there's room to sneak him in, but I do think it might just be Jasper coming in. Now on Jaden Short, obviously he's out with the knee soreness, may miss this week as well. Banks did okay off the halfback line. Is Short a natural inclusion back in when fit, and is it on the halfback line, or do we need to try and rejuvenate him, because it still feels like we're not getting the same amount out of him that we were pre, let's call it 2022, 2023 even. It just feels like he's rolled into another bit of a, not a nothing year, but just hasn't had the same aura about him as previous years.
I reckon we give him a few weeks off to get his knee right, and then in the back half of the season, we put him in the shop window.
You've just shot Bambi, mate. I think and it doesn't matter what we think, it's what the club thinks ultimately. I think the club rate him for his leadership and what he brings to a junior group. And I think as soon as they can put him back in, he'll be back in. Now, whether I agree with that or not, it's different, but I just think that the moment he's right to come back in, he's in.
All right, well, chance for back-to-back wins, which is always nice. How do we go about winning this game? North Melbourne, I actually think they're playing better than us at the moment, despite losing more games than us. I just think they've been in contest for a little bit longer and just look a bit better structurally and methodically with the way they move the ball. But they're not without their faults, though. Like, they've leaked some goals. And I think I was hoping, not hoping, I shouldn't say that, but McDonald I thought was going to get rubbed out, but he didn't. Probably in the context of what we suspend people for, that's not a bad thing. But I think we were maybe a chance to stretch their back line, possibly, if he was out. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how we go. Sheasel's moved back to halfback to do some more damage. They've got Wardlaw and LDU rolling through the midfield. Jerry's an absolute monster. He's probably the one player I'm most nervous about because he rucks the whole game. So when Nank's off, someone like Sims is going to be exposed to him, and that could get ugly. No, through no fault of Sims or anything like that. It's just how good that Sherry is.
I just think North's going to be a bit more polished around the ball. I think with our skill turnovers, where West Coast didn't really hurt us, like they kicked about 7-8 goals from turnovers or what,
seven,
some number.
7 goals, 7.
Yeah. I just think North will punish us even harder with our skill level. So we're going to be up against it. I think they're a bit more classy through the middle. They'll have a bit more run for us than us off the halfback line. I think, like you said, this is going to be their grand final. They're going to be up for this one. This is the one they're going, we need to win this game, you know?
Yeah. My concern with everyone saying Short at the half forward line is I don't think he's good at finding the ball. I think he's generally better being led to the ball, which is why he's worked down half back better. And someone said, oh, he'll be delisted at season's end. He's contracted till the end of 2028, so he's going nowhere. I think North structurally are a lot more drilled than us.
Yeah.
And their shape We will find it hard to penetrate them, I reckon.
Yeah.
What do you think of the midfield battle? So we've got LDU, Wardlaw, Powell, Simkin up against Hopper, Taranto, Ross, Lawler, Dow, McAuliffe, if he goes through there. Is it part of the ground that we can potentially get on top of or at least break even?
We're going to have a choice. we have to break even these guys to have a remote chance.
Yeah. They do. They do have a deep midfield. We don't. This is where we've talked earlier on in the episode about maybe putting someone like Seth Campbell in there for a while. Mm. The dynamicism is what we currently miss in the middle. that's what we need to find. LDU breaks out really well. What are you thinking there, CB? Your eyes are darting sideways.
I'm just trying to think if they're quick through the midfield or they're just big and skilled through the midfield. Because I think that's the one thing. We're not quick. I don't know if North are that quick through the middle, but they're just polished. And the problem is Schiesel off a half back line, he could really open us up horrifically if we don't put a leash on him.
So, we've got to send someone to him. Not as a permanent tagger, but I think that's the job for Mansell. Mansell's likely to get in his face. He's got the speed to shut him down when he gets on a bit of a run. Mansell can hurt him the other way too on the scoreboard. I reckon he could be not a bad matchup for Schiesel if he's playing on halfback.
I'm just going to say this. I know it's a separate show. I'm absolutely dirty at myself that I didn't give Mansell votes. He was one that I really wanted to put him a vote card, but I didn't. After 2 damn weeks, he had a good return to form on the weekend, Mansell. So you're right. He's a guy that could definitely do a shutdown role.
Well, who are we going to put on Caleb Daniel then? Because if we can constrict Lawler. Daniel... Sorry?
Lawler.
You reckon?
Yep. Lawler can get him in the air, and he's strong enough to go with him.
Yeah, because if we can contain or if we can limit Daniel and Schiesel, that goes a long way for them limiting their distribution.
Yeah. Yep.
What about how do we see the backup ruck piece playing out for us? Like, I don't want to drop Sims. I want to see him play because I thought he did really, really well. I'm just scared about the sheer lack of size that he has in his body at this time in development to go against Big Sherry when Nank's off the ground.
I think we're going. I think you'll find we're going with that structure again this week.
Yeah, can we just roll with it and just whatever happens, happens?
Yeah, I'm positive. If I heard Uze's presser correct, we're rolling with that again.
And I mean, it's going to be a huge learning for Sims to play on someone like him as well. So he's going to take a lot from it one way or another. I just worry, yes, how we'll come off from that one. Greg's raised, what about Larky? Here's another one on my list. So we've got Bolter available because it's a day game, which is nice. Miller, I know people are still, I've seen people still having a go at Miller, but he's still ranking really well for having one-on-one contests. So he's not going anywhere anytime soon. But which of those two gentlemen get Nick Larky, do you think?
Has to be Bolter.
Because I think so too.
Larky's a gun and he's quick. So,
yeah, I agree.
But like usual, it comes down to how much we can stifle the midfield delivery and how quick they can use it into their forward 50. Now, I was on a North Melbourne show earlier this morning, and they were saying that they felt that their clearance work was as scrubby and grubby as ours. So it's going to be a bit of a battle of who maybe is less shit at getting clearances and using the ball the most out of the midfield. And that's where if you've got someone in there with a bit of speed, that can help that break away from the stoppage, which we don't quite have. So... it just feels like that's what's going to be won or lost. That's why I would love to see a Campbell roll through there just to add a bit of point of difference.
Don't disagree. And it's the other thing too with the wings, there's probably a little bit of acid on Hugo this week. He's had 2 down weeks. He got touched up by D'Ambrosio and had another poor week this week. He wouldn't want to have three poor games in a row, I wouldn't think.
He was our number 2 for pressure racks on the weekend, just quietly.
Was he?
Yep.
Well, there you go.
So it's like I've said. Look, and don't get me wrong, he didn't have a great game. I'm not saying that by any stretch, but like I've said a number of occasions, and that goes to Tom Brown with that tackle as well. Sometimes when it's not going your way, what are the little things that you can do to help, you know, impact the result? Hugo halved the contest there in the last 2 minutes, which was really important.
Kicked a clutch goal during the game as well.
Yeah. From a run.
Was that 50? A 50? If that had been the other way around.
That wasn't a 50.
We would have been filthy.
Anyway, we're owed a few. Yeah, so, you know, Hugo has been poor. He is on borrowed time. But we have to look at the totality of it. Much like we were saying, like Dow was poor again on the weekend. But previous to that, Dow's defensive efforts have been what's keeping him in the side.
Yep.
So, I think there's enough wingers now that Hugo's in a bit of trouble, especially if K-Mac goes back to the wing. That takes care of one straight away.
Well, and if Short returns, where's Banks going? Or Trezise?
Well, so, Banks should. If Short's out, then Banks will probably line up on halfback again this week, I imagine. And that's good that we can rotate Trezise and Banks through wing and halfback. So that gives us a couple of options there. Like you said before, Dow can play on the wing as well. And look, Camden's still, he's going to finish up in a year or two. So we kind of need Hugo to get that experience and get that consistency sooner rather than later so we can take over full time. But I guess they're probably just banking on his strengths, still being good strengths in terms of his speed to be able to break lines and things like that, and just hope the rest works itself out.
And I'll say this on K-Mac. I hope he gets another year with the expectation that obviously next year, he'd only get a game. He'd be a pure depth player. But I don't think the club is quite ready to lose a player like Camden yet with what he brings to the group, how he teaches the young blokes to train, all the things he brings off the field and around the club. I hope we keep him for another year on the list.
He's a connector. He's a fabric guy.
Correct. Correct.
I mean, on Camden McIntosh, 200 games this week. I know at the start of the season there was probably a point in time where people weren't thinking he was going to make it the 200 or it was going to be later in the year, but I think he's played every game this year to date from memory. So
there were many calling for him to be delisted at the end of last year. Caps, he's going to get to 200.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to get there. So he started in 2013. What pick was he? Pick number 31 in the 2012 National Draft. Two-time Premiership player in 2017 and 2020. Rising Star nominee in 2015. And look, he's been a pleasure to watch on the wing. And like we've said plenty of time on this show, that the amount of unrewarded stuff that he does that doesn't get a stat, but it sets up the ground. He protects the fat side. He'll win a two-on-one contest. He's been an absolute workhorse for the Richmond Football Club, and I'm super pumped for him to get the 200 games. So, yeah, make sure we get down there, get the headbands on. I'm sure he'll find that highly amusing to see a crowd full of headbands, no doubt.
Yeah. Nah,
it's a home game, so make sure they're black.
And there's a bloke. There's a bloke that could have tossed it in after getting excluded from two grand finals in 2019. Oh, yeah. And, fought back and, 5-6 years later, have a look at him. So, this is a really good outcome. Superstar.
And if anyone needs an electric scooter or if they need their shed door fixed, he's your man.
He's your man, exactly right. No, he definitely did find a second win. But with that all being said and done, what is the final tip, including margin, for this game, gentlemen? And everyone else in chat, send through your thoughts. We'll pop a few up on the screen.
Richmond by 8. I can't tip North. They're just fucking bitching.
North have their second draw in 2 weeks.
North have their second draw in 2 weeks. Jeez, yeah. Okay.
But I'm not sure. Having said that, I'll say this. It's a little bit like that. It's a little bit like that Leonardo DiCaprio gif. If we win, pick 3. If we lose, pick 2. Who gives a shit?
So I think North are going in favourites of this game. Jones Racing says easy money. Look, I think that the Kangas might be a little bit too, just a bit too more advanced in their rebuild than what we are. But confidence can be a funny thing, and I'd love to see us win 2 in a row because it'd be just highly amusing. So I'll go the Tigers by 8 points. The MCG factor, which we didn't speak about, they haven't played or they haven't won at the G since 2017. And they don't play there a lot, so it's a long time between drinks. So I don't know how much of a thing that plays, but yeah, just an interesting little point to throw out there.
Unbloody believable.
Tell you what, there's a few people chucking out the draws here as well. Everyone's jumping on board the draw. But yeah, should be an interesting game. Make sure we get there for McIntosh's 200th game, though. Yeah, that's right, Jones. They do rarely play us at the G, so uncharted territory. But hopefully we can have a 3 or 4 quarter performance. And let's see where it takes us. But team selection will be fascinating for this one. Hoping to see Jasper get a game. I think he deserves it. VFL, I think, are playing on, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 2 or 3 o'clock on Sunday as well. So, yeah, the games, they must overlap then.
Yeah, they do. Our game starts at 1:10. The VFL's 2:05. It's bloody stupid.
That's so
it's unbloody believable.
Yeah.
That's going to be my word for the week. That's my salute to Caps. Unbloody believable.
Unbloody believable. How's your work today? Unbloody believable, love.
Yeah, that's a shit-house fixture. Anyway, thank you, gents, for jumping on tonight. Appreciate your support and your time as always. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in from around the country and the world. Yeah, we appreciate all the love and support. Make sure you give everyone a follow on Twitter and Facebook, YouTube, and things like that. And yeah, there's a few videos coming out during the week. Behind Frenemy Lines is teed up as well with Kenga TV. Marnie, she's the host of that show, so we'll do that later in the week as well. But no, have a wonderful week, everybody. And until next time, go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Stick it up and do it for Cappy.
Do it for Cappy.